listening to the Forza Podcast with your host, Marsh.
What up? What up, Canes fans? It is the Forza Up Podcast. It is Tuesday, July 14th, and it is a beautiful day to podcast. As always, it's your boy, Marsh. And as always, I am joined by the one and only God's favorite child, my wonderful producer and co-host, Jordan Nelson. Jordan, how are we feeling today?
Oh, I took a bow just barely, just so you know. Thank you for that magnificent introduction.
Yeah, I don't know where I was going with that. I don't know if I was feeling the spirit, but I am just so excited for this episode because we have two of my favorite people coming on today. We got Gabby Rutia coming on first, and then Roman Kane coming on after that. And so I am hyped. We have so much to get to. I wanted to address two things first, and we're going to talk about this in the show. Okay. First off, good news. Good news first. Derek King was named to the Davey O'Brien Award watch list today.
Huh? Yeah.
Yay. He's so good. So that's the good news. I mean, it's not surprising. He's going to freaking ball his ass out this year for the Hurricanes at quarterback. He is God's other favorite child. Here's the second thing, and this is the thing that if you saw me on Twitter today, I was a lunatic. I was sounding like the Marsh of old. ESPN, the almighty ESPN, you know them. They're great. They released their ACC preseason rankings, and FSU was number 4, and your Miami Hurricanes, the team who has beaten FSU 3 straight years, the team that has clearly more talent, was 7th.
Yeah. Interesting. Dude. When I think about that, my mind is just flooded with all the normal middle school insults that you can't say anymore, you know?
It's like, I thought this was ESPN. I thought they were smart.
No, they're apparently they're not at all.
Oh my gosh. Yeah, we're going to dive into this a little because I'm so flabbergasted because it's so, and they were ranked, I think they were ranked ahead of North Carolina too. Now that's just stupid.
Yeah.
Like they had Louisville at number 3. And UNC at 5, and Miami at 7, and FSU with 9th-year senior James Blackman at quarterback, number 4.
Yeah. Oh, jeez, dude.
Like, I should not be this mad. And honestly, like, no, like, I don't care that we're 7th. Like, we went 6-7 last year. I really don't care. The only thing that pisses me off is that FSU is above us because I don't care if it's racquetball. I don't care if it's football in November. I don't care if it's preseason rankings by a possible fake ESPN account. If we lose to FSU, I will get mad. I will retaliate, and I will fight for my right, and I will fight for my Canes.
I will fight for my right to party.
I ain't no bitch. Okay. Is Gabby ready?
He is ready. He's born ready.
That's – I love him. Let's get him on.
Cool. Gabby, what's up, man?
Hey, what's going on, guys?
Gabby!
What's good, Marsh?
What's going on, man? Gabby Rutia from 247 Sports is back on the show. One of my favorite people, not just in Kane Story. Gabby's just one of my favorite people in general. How you doing, man?
I'm good. I got no complaints right now, honestly, man. I'm doing all right. How are you guys doing?
We're good, man. We're good. Hey,
so Gabby and I are getting ready to become college graduates.
Yep. That's exciting, man.
Praise the Lord, man.
Yeah, man. We've had extensive conversations about how long we've been waiting for this day to come.
Exactly. Dude, we were having that conversation like last April.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. So, dude.
Last time we had you on, Gabby, it was the day before you announced that you were going with 247. So last time you were on, you had announced that you were done with State of the U. But would you mind just telling us how the 247 gig is going so far? And congrats, by the way, man. It's cool seeing your name, you know, up in lights, you know, with that info and stuff.
Yeah, no, thank you. I appreciate that, man. It's been great, honestly. Like, I'm really just so grateful to have gotten the opportunity. You know, I don't really know how much, like, I just feel like it still feels like surreal to me, you know. Like, I feel like 24/7 Sports is one of those places where it's just like I've always kind of looked at that as like the source of information, and it's kind of like, you know, I feel like I deserved it, you know. I do feel like I worked hard, and I don't say that in like an arrogance. Yeah. Like, I say that just because I really do believe I put in the work and all that stuff. But at the same time, you definitely feel like that responsibility to provide quality content. And you know, at first I was like, can I do this? You know, like, this is much different than, like, you know, the work I was doing before. But then, you know, you kind of get into it and you see kind of like, what's really cool about the company is, like, you know, you have so much support from everyone across the entire network. You know, like, this isn't something that you're diving into alone and you're expected to just like hit the ground running and figure out, you know. Like, Andrew Ivins has been such an incredible mentor. You know, he's bestowed so much knowledge upon me and just helped me really just like find my footing in this new field. And I'm really grateful for him. And, you know, just like the time that he's invested in me, and just for him like believing in me, and just everyone else in the company. It really is a collective effort, you know, between like finding information, finding sources and all that stuff. It's, you know, that's what makes the company so special. That's what makes it run so well. And I'm honestly just really happy to be a part of it. And I'm excited about what the future holds, because I know that this is just the beginning, and I'm honestly just grateful. That's really the word. I still kind of pinch myself whenever I see my name, like my byline, come up on InsideTheU.com.
Dude, it makes me feel like a proud brother or something. Maybe besides your fiance, I don't know if there's anyone prouder than I was. So for those of you who don't know, Gabby and I were part of the same quote unquote recruiting class for State of the U back in, when was that, like May 2018?
Yeah, I think so, around that time.
Yeah, it feels like forever ago, but I mean, Gabby is one of the hardest workers I know. So professional too. He's not an annoying asshole on Twitter like I am. Like, the kid is like the best kind of people. Great brother too. We love your brother. So, dude, yeah, you are killing it. And dude, this is what we wanted, man. This is what we talked about like so many times. Like, this is it. And you're doing it, man. So. Again, congrats, man.
Thanks, man. Thanks, man. You're right on the way, man. I believe that. Hey, you're right behind me.
Hopefully, man. Hopefully. Okay, so let's get into this thing. The first thing I wanted to ask you, we're gonna talk about Cameron Kitchens, things like that. But did you see ESPN's preseason rankings for the ACC?
I did. I didn't see them like officially from ESPN, so I'm not sure if they are like actually ESPN's, but if they are, I have some. They're suspect, to say the least. They're definitely suspect.
Hey, yeah. So FSU at 4 and Miami 7. I get riled up by that, like, and I act, you know, I overreact and I get angry. What were your thoughts? And like, do you think I just don't get it, because there's no way in hell that FSU has more talent than Miami.
Yeah. No. The response on your end is definitely warranted. Like, I just feel like any rational person watching college football, despite how bad Miami finished, can kind of put two and two together and be like, all right, Miami's not the seventh best team in the ACC, and Florida State probably isn't the fourth best team in the ACC. I'm not even mad about like them being ahead of Miami or whatever. Just the fact that they're fourth, I believe they're ahead of UNC, and that's just a big no. I think Louisville is super high too, if I'm not mistaken. I think they were like third, or I mean, I remember just seeing Louisville way up there too. It doesn't make sense, honestly. I kind of throw that away and just be like, all right, whoever put this list together is either trolling, trying to get. I understand it's slow, you know. There's no sports going on, you know. It's very easy to throw Miami on the bottom of that list and know you're gonna get the clicks, you know, you're gonna get the responses that you kind of want. And I just don't see any validity in it, honestly. That's probably why I didn't get like upset. I was just like, okay, like this is just a little ridiculous.
So I mean, because I've been saying for a while now, like, and like, I respect FSU, like, they're definitely our rival, but like,
definitely
I don't see them being very successful this season. Like, I don't like James. Like, I'm not a James Blackman fan. Their offensive line is still not great. Yep. Besides Terry at receiver and Marvin Wilson at DT, who are like big name guys like that would elevate them to even be in the conversation of being more talented than a team with De'Ara King, Brevin Jordan, Quincy Roche, Greg Rousseau. Like, I don't know. I just don't get it, but I just had to ask you because it's been driving me crazy. And I don't know if – because, yeah, I don't know if it is a real ESPN account, but, man. Woo.
Yeah, no. I know. I mean, they got a couple guys. You know, they're always going to be talented, but I just feel like there's just so many, like, deeply rooted issues at Florida State that are like just going to – I'm sorry I didn't catch that.
It's a little similar to Miami last year. They just seem like they have a lot more problems off the football field.
Definitely, yeah. And I just feel like that there's just something that's going on in Florida. I feel like it's been for a couple of years now, really since Jimbo left, like, or even that last year that Jimbo was there. Like, I feel like there's just a lot of things that just aren't right about the program right now. They just haven't been able to figure out. I just don't think there's any like real structure over there. And I just think that for those reasons, like, they're talented, you know, they got guys. Like, I know Durden on the defensive line is also good. You know, they got LeBourne, they got the transfer from Texas A&M, they got Santi Samuels. But still, like, it just feel like there's talent there, but it never seems to like really come together. I definitely don't see them being a top seven team in the ACC. I don't think anyone in their right mind would believe that Florida State is better than the other, what, eight teams in the ACC. It's just not going to happen.
Well, and I have all these FSU folk just going at me, say, well, FSU is actually supposed to be better this year. I'm like, in what world? Like, I just, okay, whatever. Let's move on. Okay, Cameron Kitchens. I am stoked, Gabby. I am so excited. I love this kid's film. I love, you know, he's a playmaker, but great tackler as well. He's everything that you want in a safety. What do you think this means for Miami's 2021 class, their future at the safety position, and how do you think he will fit into, you know, the Miami defense?
Yeah, Cameron Kitchens is a huge addition, and I think the fact that Miami won yet another battle over an SEC program, I think that just speaks volumes to kind of like where Miami's at right now on the recruiting trail. You know, this is a kid that a couple cycles ago might have slipped away to Auburn. You know, we would have probably seen the same situation where Romello Brinson, see him maybe take off to a Texas A&M, maybe take off to a Georgia. But Miami's doing a really, really good job of kind of keeping these kids home. So I think that Kitchens is a huge addition to the class. As far as like what he brings is just, you know, this is a kid that, you know, he's 5'11", 200 pounds. You know, he definitely has the ball skills to play safety. You know, this is going to be his third consecutive year starting for a Northwestern team that's won three straight state titles. So this is a kid with a ton of talent that has those ball hawking abilities, but he's also versatile enough to potentially, you know, come into the box and play some, like, you know, just pretty much move down and kind of you're able to move him around on the defense, which is something that Miami's kind of been recruiting for, you know, almost like if you're kind of read the tea leaves, you kind of see that Miami's recruiting a lot of those types of kids, like positionless guys where, you know, you're able to kind of move them around. We saw with Frierson, he was kind of recruited as a cornerback, but then he played safety and he's moving to striker. Keontre Smith was a safety that's moving to striker. You know, all these guys that you can kind of move them around. And I feel like that's that modern style of defense. Like, I feel like Kitchens really fits what this defensive staff is trying to do with just, like, you know, athletic guys that are able to do a bunch of different things well, that are and that are fast, you know, that are able to react and just play that just like aggressive style of defense that Manny Diaz likes. So I think Kitchens is a great addition to the secondary room. I think he fits in really well with the rest of the group of guys over there. I think, like, you know, like I said, he's so versatile, and I feel like a lot of those guys are. Like, we're talking about Avante Williams this class, and, you know, we're talking about him as a guy that could potentially drop down and play slot. You know, he's a guy that could be so electric in so many different places in the secondary, and I think Kitchens is just another one of those types of guys where there's just the possibilities are endless, especially once you get him to a college system and, you know, you continue to develop him and you get him with David Feely and stuff. I just think that he's one of those guys that, you know, just brings so much to a defense. And then you throw on his leadership skills and just all of that, and you have a really, really good defensive back in Cameron Kitchens. I really believe that this was a huge get.
Yeah, so we've on the podcast, we've heard him described as having Jaquan Johnson's leadership ability but better ball skills. How do you feel about that comparison?
Oh, yeah, I think that's fair. I mean, again, he's a kid that's intercepted 13 passes at Miami Northwestern. You know, there's a kid that's playing, you know, one of the best divisions in the state of Florida. You know, he's playing 5A football, and he's doing it extremely well. I think that's very, very fair. I mean, the leadership characteristics, he's kind of like a show don't tell type of kid. He's a kid that shows up to work every day. He works extremely hard. He's put on a lot of good weight and just really made himself into an exceptional athlete. While, you know, I've talked to a couple of his teammates, specifically Tim Burns, and every time I talk to Tim Burns, he tells me, like, there's not one person I want playing behind me. Like, there's not one person I trust more playing behind me than Cameron Kitchens. Like, you know, I just think that speaks volumes to the type of player that he is. I think that speaks volumes to what he brings to a defense, and the fact that he says that every single time I talk to him and how much he trusts him back there, I think that tells you everything you need to know from a guy that's played with him more than anybody else. So I think that's a fair comparison. I know people kind of mentioned that, and I think that's solid.
Nice. And I think we're all in, you know, I think we all know or assume that Breshard Smith is going to be the next player to hopefully commit to Miami. Gabby, I'm a huge fan of Breshard Smith. I wrote an article for State of the U last week about him. The dude is, I think, just so underrated and just so, I mean, you guys need to bump him up over there at 247, man, because I think, what was it, like 13 touchdowns, 36 catches, over 600 yards receiving. Do you think that, like, how, because I think he could contribute right away at Miami. Like, I think that he can be like a legit playmaker for the Hurricanes right away. What do you like about his game, and would you say that Miami is the team to beat?
At this stage, yeah, I think Miami's sitting in a pretty good spot. I know Florida's still working hard to kind of bring him back into that class as a former Gator commit. But yeah, I think Miami definitely has to like where they're at right now. As far as his game, yeah, Marsh, this is a really talented kid. You know, he's one of the fastest players in the state. I think he has he's timed at 4.4 in the lasers. So this kid has blazing speed. He is a three-star, but, you know, the way I kind of describe that is as the old saying goes down here, a three-star in South Florida is a four-star anywhere else. So I think this is one of those situations where you kind of throw the stars away. You don't really think about how the rest of the country views him. You know, he is listed apparently a little bit smaller than he actually is. We're still waiting for some verified, like, measurements and weight there. But I think he's listed at, like, 5'9.5", like, 160. Apparently, according to his coach at Palmetto, he's 5'11", closer to 190 now. If that's the case, I mean, I really honestly could care less what he's rated. I think that this is just a kid that's really impressive, extremely athletic, really fast. And he's one of those guys that's, I mean, you said it, 13 touchdowns on, what, 36 catches? That's, I think it's a little over a third of the time he touches the ball, he's scoring. So, yeah, put that guy on my team anytime, and I'll definitely be happy with it. I think that he's an electric guy, you know, kind of listed as an all-purpose. Well, he was listed as an all-purpose back, a guy that, you know, like, I feel like, I believe it was Tyreek Hill that was also a running back in college. You know, this is a kid that could really do a lot of different things. Like, it's one of those guys, you just put the ball in his hands and he'll find a way to make a play. I think that's a good way to describe Breshard Smith. Not saying he is Tyreek Hill, but, you know, he flashes the elite speed. He flashes the ability to just do it all, you know, be able to carry the ball to the backfield, catch the ball from the slot. I think this is a really talented kid that Miami would be happy to have in this class.
He could really drop that commitment note at any moment right now. What do you think the timetable is right now? What do you think Canes fans are looking at? If you had to guess.
If I had to guess, I spoke to him a few weeks ago and he just told me soon. I'm not sure what to make out of that soon, because soon to these kids could be, it obviously wasn't within the 2 weeks that I spoke to him. So it wasn't that soon. I think by the end of the summer, like at the end of these summer months, I think it's, I wouldn't be surprised to see a commitment from him, just based off, like, you know, what people are hearing, what people are talking about. I don't think that I think that that could be a pretty reasonable timeline, and potentially before if the season does start before his senior season. So maybe later on into August, potentially at the end of the month. I think by the end of August, we will probably know where he's headed, if I were guessing at this point.
Okay. Okay, next. Sorry, go ahead, Jordan.
So I got a question for you, Gabby. So there's been a lot of buzz around some of the five-star guys that we are in the mix for. Specifically, James Williams, Mason Smith, Leonard Taylor, Jake Garcia, and Jason Marshall. If you wouldn't mind, I'd love to hear you rank those guys in terms of like who you think 1 to 5 the most likely to commit to Miami. So your first one would be the most likely to end up here. Fifth would be who you think we have the worst shot at.
Okay. All right, I could do that. My 1 and 2 are almost like, I feel like a 1A, 1B, because I don't really know who to put on top of the other. But I do feel pretty good about Miami. Like, out of the names that you mentioned, I feel probably the best out of these guys. And it would put, I would put James Williams and Leonard Taylor. I think those two would probably be 1A, 1B, just because I think James Williams is, I mean, he's publicly said it. I mean, he just wants to see Miami win. I think really that's all it comes down to. I think if Miami has a good season, as we're anticipating, especially with the fact that so many kids are already staying locally, I think James Williams is, I think it's a possibility if Miami takes care of business and does what they need to do. And I think the same goes for Leonard Taylor. And I still feel pretty good about Leonard Taylor. I feel like every passing day, I feel like a lot of people are becoming more and more confident that Miami really is actually a player here. So the fact that I feel good about Leonard Taylor and I'm willing to group him with James Williams, I think says a lot about kind of the ball being in Miami's court at this point. I think it really is up to Miami which one of these, if they land these guys. I just think if they go out there, do what they need to do. I think it's, I'm not going to say it's likely. I think it's at least possible that one or potentially both end up in the class. Third, I'm going to go Jake Garcia. I do think that there is something to people saying that he does really like USC. I think that that's probably his dream school. I think something would have to really go down for him to actually decide to step away. But, you know, people that I've spoken to people that are very close to Jake, and they have told me that they believe he's going to flip. Like, he's going to flip. Like, they, like the source told me that they, that he believes at some point Jake Garcia is going to decommit from USC, and Miami, if that were to happen, I think the most logical destination would be Miami. We don't know what other schools are talking to him, so we can't say that for sure. But I think if Jake Garcia does decide to open up, and that's a big if, Miami fans should feel pretty good about where they sit there. Fourth, I'm going to go, this is kind of, I feel like this is kind of a toss-up, because I don't, if you would ask me last week, I definitely would have put Jason Marshall fifth, because I felt like he was pretty adamant about the fact that he was going to either Alabama, Clemson, or Florida. But it seems like he's, like, in these recent weeks, he's kind of, I guess, become more open to Miami. Maybe it is a kind of a factor of all these kids staying home. The word, like, the rumor is that he's going to expand his top group. One of our writers at 24/7 Sports, Christopher Stock, he actually spoke with his coach, and that's pretty much what he said, that the idea is that Jason Marshall is going to expand his top three, maybe to a top five, and Miami is expected to be a part of that group. So because of that, I'm going to put Jason Marshall at four. I'm going to put Mason Smith fifth. And, you know, I feel like that's really not even, like, in this situation, it's really, like, I'm putting him fifth. Like, normally that would be, like, no chance, but I don't think that that's really the case. You know, this is a guy that has visited Miami before. Like, he's competed in front of the defensive staff. So the fact that Miami's made the cut and that he's already been on campus at this stage, in this atmosphere, in this climate of the way recruiting and college football's kind of at right now, I think the fact that the kid has been on campus really has, like, a leg up on a, let's say, on a program that he hasn't visited but maybe likes the idea of. So I think that the fact that Mason Smith's been to Coral Gables, I think that there's at least something there. But at the end of the day, he is from Louisiana, and LSU is freshly off a national championship, and LSU gets what they want in Louisiana, and they want Mason Smith. I think it's all but certain that he probably ends up committing to the home state Tigers. I just can't imagine Miami beating out LSU for an in-state product like that at this stage, especially one so highly touted.
He's okay. Good, man. I love his tape.
Yeah, I mean, they're all good. I mean, I want them all to come to Miami, especially. Yeah. I'm still confident that he makes that flip. Okay, so you and I both wrote a piece on this, a little more recruiting news. 3-star offensive guard Ross Masuli, from SoCal, Mater Dei High School in Southern California, put the Miami in his top five yesterday. Question one. Do you think Miami makes a serious push at him? And two, well, I guess two should be one. Do you think Miami is going to take another offensive lineman in this class, or and do you think they need to?
I'll answer the second one first. I think that it's possible that they take a fourth one. I know that if signing day were tomorrow and these were the three guys that they signed, I know that they would be happy. I know that they would be very satisfied with, you know, with Michael McLaughlin, the offensive lineman out of Stoneman Douglas, Lawrence Seymour, the offensive lineman out of Miami Central, and Ryan Rodriguez out of Columbus. They would be very satisfied with that class. I think a fourth guy would have to be someone that is really just, you know how Pat Riley calls his free agents like a whale? Like, you know, it would have to be a whale. It would have to be, I think it would have to be a Tristan Lee. I think it would have to be someone of that caliber. I'm not sure if they're going to go take a fourth, because you got to remember, Miami's at sitting on 17 commitments right now. You know, the numbers are getting a little tight at this stage, you know, especially with so many targets that they still hope to really get after. So I think if they do take a fourth, it's really going to have to be one of those type of guys. Are they going to take an interior lineman from California that hasn't played football in a year, because he after he transferred from Cathedral Catholic as a sophomore, he had to sit out last year due to the California transfer rules before landing at Mater Dei now as a senior, and we still don't even know if there's even going to be a high school football season. So is that going to be the fourth guy you take? I'm not saying the kid's not talented. I think he was like first team all state as a sophomore. This is a talented kid, no doubt. But are you gonna do that? I'm honestly not 100% sure at this stage that they're willing to do that. I could be wrong. Things can change. You know, this is a very fluid situation with everything going on right now. But if I were a betting man, I would not anticipate Ross Masuli being in this class. You know, he also has other programs that are really going after him. He's a West Coast kid that has USC in there, Hawaii, and he's very proud of his heritage. If you just scan through his social media, I think that those are probably two legit options. And then Michigan and Alabama. So even if that were the case, you're gonna have to beat out some big boys that are really going after him for a West Coast kid. So
part of the reason why I want him, just because I've wanted a Polynesian and a Samoan like at Miami for so long, and I know Ross is a big Samoan. Those dudes are just monsters. Okay, Gabby, let me ask you one more question. This is for on the current roster. So you were at spring practice, and we may have asked you this last time you were on. Is the Jalen Knighton hype real? Because I am the biggest fan of him. I think he's going to have a great freshman season. But I want to ask someone who was there looking at him, you know, in person on Green Tree, is the hype real for him as a freshman?
Yeah, I think Jalen Knighton is a really, really talented kid. I don't think there's any doubt that the hype is I'm not gonna sit here and say the kid's gonna like pop off for 700-800 yards as a freshman. But I do think that I just think based on the fact that he was healthy and those four spring practices became a lot more valuable. Like, it seemed like a very limited amount at the time, but it definitely became more valuable knowing that they weren't gonna get any more at all. And so I think that he's a guy that could really make an impact behind Cam Davis. I think one of those Cam Harris. I think that he's going to be one of those guys that really gets some workload behind him as a running back too. I know him and Don Chaney are really competing. Don Chaney looks big too, but I think Knighton is really, really talented. We saw what he could do at Deerfield Beach. I mean, this is a kid that when he was committed to Oklahoma as a junior, I was like, man, like, it really sucks that Miami can't land a kid like this. And then, you know, you fast forward a recruiting cycle and here he is enrolled early enrolled at your program. So I'm a big Jalen Knighton guy. I think that he has a ton of potential. And, you know, it was only four practices. You know how it is, Marsh. We see a pretty limited amount of that. So I can't tell you that I've seen Jalen Knighton pop off, like rip off like a bunch of like huge runs or anything like that. I wish I could. I could just see how he moved, and I think he moves really well. I can tell you what the word is around the program, and the word is that he definitely has juice. So I think we're gonna see him play, and I wouldn't be surprised if the Jalen Knighton hype was in fact real, and he ends up being a really quality player for us for the next 3 years.
Run, Rooster, run, baby. Dude, I I mean, people don't realize how hard. I mean, he's the second leading rusher in Broward County history, and he was playing against like the biggest schools and the best teams in the state of Florida. Rushed for over 5,000 yards, 4.4 speed. I'm all about him. But Gabby, bro, thank you so much, man. Thank you so much for taking the time, and you're always welcome on the show, brother. And when I'm in Florida in a few weeks, we better link up, whether it's at practice or shenanigans.
Absolutely. Oh man, I'm down for those wings again, man.
Yeah, dude.
I've been craving those bad boys. I will. Yeah. Man. And congratulations to you guys for. I know you guys are doing really well with this podcast. I saw you guys have climbed up the college football rankings with this podcast across the Apple Podcast rankings. So I'm very proud of you guys. I'm happy to be a part of this.
Hey man, it's a team effort, brother. But yeah, love you, man. Thank you so much for coming on.
Take it easy, guys.
Thanks, Gabby. See you, man. Cool. So we're running behind with Roe, so I'm gonna hurry and get him on just so we're not keeping him waiting.
Okay.
Roe, what's up, man?
Yeah, how's it going?
Hi, Roe.
What's up, Marsh?
Nothing much, man. We got Roe from my fellow writer at the State of You and also from the Orange Bowl podcast. One of my favorite Orange Bowl boys, my bad. One of my favorite people on Kane's Twitter. How you doing, brother?
I am doing great. So happy to be with you guys. I thank you for the invite. And yeah, man, it's raining up this way pretty hard. So we'll deal with it. But it's South Florida. It's typical for this time of year, right? Sunny with a cloud chance of showers mid-afternoon. So that's exactly what just happened.
Yeah, man, I'll be there in a few weeks. I'm looking forward to it. So nothing like a South Florida summer. It's kind of hell on earth, but you love it at the same time.
Gotcha.
Absolutely. Okay, so everyone knows you're the quarterback guy. You know what you're talking about. Let's talk about our boy Jake Garcia. I know you kind of did a little film breakdown between him and Jalen Milroe not too long ago. Me and Jordan are huge Jake Garcia fans, and I think you're a pretty big Jake Garcia fan as well. Is that correct?
That is absolutely, absolutely correct. He is just a very, very talented deliverer of the football. When I did that, you know, because State of the U was having that video game week, so I kind of put it in a Street Fighter-esque kind of manner. And they both have different skill sets, but where I like Jalen Milroe for a second with his feet and his ability to make plays and escape the pocket and just hit a gear, I thought Jake Garcia was equally as impressive on the other side as far as an arm talent. He just had the ability to throw from different angles. He can see things. He can shorten up when he needs to. He can put his foot on the gas. And Marsh, that was probably one of the most impressive things. When I saw Jake Garcia just really want to go to the next level and just hit that gear, he has some really, really, really good straight line trajectory. And what do I mean by that? It's like by the time the ball comes out of the quarterback's hands, I just like to draw a straight line. And he literally could draw it on a rope. And when the receiver caught the ball, you could tell it was going to go another 5 to 7 yards past his receiver. So when he wants to hit that other gear, he's a very good rotationally accelerated deliverer of the football, meaning he knows exactly how to use his lower half. And I just walked away with a very impressed at his exquisite ability to throw the football. That was the word. I was like, man, he's an exquisite deliverer of the football. This is a very, very talented kid. Very high on him as well. I think if you turn around and you get somebody like Tyler Van Dyke 1 year and you turn around and get a guy, Jake Garcia, the next year, that is exactly, if you're going to get into the national conversation, if you're going to get to the national consciousness about football, it starts at the quarterback position. No offense to anybody else, but it starts with us. And in that case, you definitely stack chips from 1 year to the next, pulling off TBD. And if you can land Jake Garcia.
Well, and you just led into my next question, because I mean, I'd say that I'm fairly confident that Garcia will decommit from USC and flip to Miami. Let me ask you this. Tyler Van Dyke, I feel like you're a big Tyler Van Dyke fan. I love the breakdowns you did with him. I know that, you know, he's a Connecticut guy, just like our boy Toast. And let me ask you this. Because he's like almost been forgotten about by the fans with, you know, this whole Garcia to the U movement. If you had to pick, if Garcia comes to the U, which quarterback is the guy for the future at Miami, Van Dyke or Garcia?
You know, it's funny it took this long for this question, and I knew it was going to come, and I knew it was going to happen, and I know where my answer is going to lie. It's Tyler Van Dyke. For the simple reason when I – like if I did a Street Fighter comparison between the two, and I think that might be something that once, you know, Garcia does pull the trigger, and yes, USC's got a crowded, you know, quarterback room, especially once they went ahead and took their commitment from Miller Moss. So you see two, and you don't really see a situation where you have two top-end quarterbacks sticking in the same quarterback room. I mean, just look at the transfer market. Once they get at a destination, they're going to continuously move. So I agree with you. I don't think Garcia is going to carry forth with his commitment to USC very much longer. So now let's get to the question that you said. So Tyler Van Dyke versus Jake Garcia. I have it on good authority, Marsh, that, you know, when he was on the green tree and he just arrived on campus, nobody was delivering the football better than Tyler Van Dyke. And in that case, now you had King wasn't materialized yet. He didn't come through the portal. And I don't, by no means necessary, do I want anybody to think that Tyler Van Dyke's going to start this year. This is King's season. If we have a season, whether it's an ACC shortened season, or if we go into the spring and we have a fuller season in the spring, either way, King's going to be the guy this year, barring injury. But Tyler Van Dyke to me is the goods. And you got to watch it in parts. And the reason why I can edge him out and say I believe Tyler Van Dyke over Garcia, because he's been in the system. He's got that college weight room for one extra year. They have some comparable traits. I think in terms of short shuttle, Tyler Van Dyke has him. I think he has some sneaky athleticism that's going to surprise some people. I like his ability to, you know, his escapability. I love what Tyler Van Dyke brings to the table in terms of just sensing the pocket, moving around. And when he wants to throw a straight line trajectory, when he wants to get on it, oh my goodness, he's got a gun. You know, I'm going to put him – he's not going to be in the Stephen Morris category. Stephen was the guy at the University of Miami who, bar none, has had the best arm for me that I've witnessed. But Tyler Van Dyke, Kosi's got a really good live arm, and Tyler Van Dyke, Kosi, they're going to creep up into that, like right under Stephen Morris' arm, that live wire arm, got that propensity to go ahead and hit that next gear, hit it deep. So Tyler definitely has the arm to make all the throws. So does Jake Garcia. In terms of athleticism, though, I'm going to give the slight edge to Tyler Van Dyke. And because he's been in the University of Miami system, because he's got the weight room, because he has the ability to digest and acclimate, I'm going to give the edge next year to Tyler Van Dyke.
Cool. So I love hearing that. You know, I'm a big Tyler Van Dyke fan as well. You know, I'm all about Jake Garcia, but I'm very much a proponent of you have to get a quarterback every season. And I'm going to ask your help right now. I need you to chastise the Miami fan base for saying that we do not need to take a quarterback because of Tyler Van Dyke. I hate the idea of that. You know, there's so many things that could go wrong. No matter how good Tyler Van Dyke is, we need a quarterback this year in this recruited class.
I'll chastise the Miami fan base for you. Here you go. 7 pounds. All right. What is 7 pounds? That's the amount of pressure you need to break your collarbone. You can just ask Tony Romo about that. All right. These guys, they're one freak accident away. I've seen it way too many times. I mean, the year that you basically had Brad Kaya thrust into that, you had a freak green tree accident with Ryan Williams and his ACL, and there you go. You're only one injury away. You're always one injury away. And here's the thing, and I kind of put it in a piece where I wrote for the State of the U. As much as I can sing superlatives about quarterbacks, the one thing, without being in the quarterback room with them from a day-to-day basis and only getting like secondhand information, you never know what's going on upstairs. You really don't. And you could have a guy just lose confidence. I'm not going to say it on the quarterback perspective, but just look at what happened with Bubba Baxter, right? This is a consensus top kicker. Next year, you know, something's creeping up in his head. He's not performing well. He needs a fresh start. I wish him all the luck in the world. But you had your kicker of the future. Everybody said he was a kicker of the future. The mind is a battleground. He kind of lost it there a little bit. We also had a Fiegel situation. And it can go ahead and it can manipulate a quarterback's mind as well. They got to be the most superior mental athlete on the team. They have to be checked in at all times. They have so much information being thrown at them at a second, at a, you know, a nanosecond. These guys got to process information. And if their mind's not right, it's next man up. So besides the injury that I told you to, very simple to go ahead and snap a collarbone. Now you add the mental component. Yes, you need a quarterback every year. Let them fight it out. Let them, you know, I'm a very meritocratic person. I mean, if there was one thing from the Al Golden era that I liked, I did like the fact that he had this system where, like, hey, the person who earns it deserves it. And at the quarterback position, no different, bar none. That's the person that needs to earn it the most. Let Garcia, Tyler Van Dyke, and Kosi. I mean, Kosi can still be there too. So you know what? Let them all go and let them see. Let the best man win. But that's what you're going to need at the University of Miami. You can't perpetually spin this wheel where we're just going to rely on, okay, Tyler Van Dyke leaves and Jake Garcia is going to be the pronounced starter next year, because now you're marching on a guy with zero experience. It's very, very rare to win national championships like that, especially at the U. And I want to preface this, and I don't want to take any backlash from this, but this isn't like a loaded everywhere else team. You can expect a phenom like Trevor Lawrence to come in. Like, literally, Trevor Lawrence can't win a national championship unless he has that supporting cast around him peppered with, like, elite-level NFL-talented dudes. I mean, that's where I'm at. So for Miami to succeed, they're going to have to build it slower, a little bit slower, and they're going to have a quarterback who's battle-tested. I don't want to see a situation where we keep – listen, Jaren Williams, for everything that happened, he was a first-time starter when he went and played against Florida. You saw how that went. You can't keep relying on these first-time starters here at Miami. And even if Tyler Van Dyke wins the gig next year, he's a first-time starter. You got to stop that perpetual wheel of marching out rookie quarterbacks.
Yeah, absolutely.
To piggyback on what you're saying, like, even so, let's follow that thread. If, you know, Tyler Van Dyke wins the starting job next season, and even if he plays good, like, fast forward to the end of the year, so he's coming back as a redshirt sophomore, but then Kosi and Tate are gone. So if we didn't take Jake Garcia this year, it's only him and Peyton Mataka in our quarterback room. Like, I don't like that at all. No matter how good Van Dyke is, I don't just want it to be him and Peyton Mataka back there.
Hey, don't doubt Mataka.
I'm not hating. It's a numbers game, man.
Yeah, and the numbers, and you're absolutely right. After that year, if Tyler Van Dyke wins the job, you're thin again at the quarterback position. So you need to listen. Anybody who wants to debate, you don't take a quarterback every year, you're missing the boat. You really are. You need to just keep taking quarterbacks every year. Now, you might get away. Listen, if you have the guy, okay, and Miami hasn't had the guy in a long time, but if you have the guy and you know you have the guy, maybe the next year you take a quarterback that's, you know, your developmental guy. This is a guy that has a lot of upside that you believe in, that, you know, fits in on the roster. You can go ahead and convince him to get there, get better, and maybe it's his job two more years down the road. Okay. You know, but you still got to take a guy, you know? Yeah. And then the following year, you get the guy again. You know, it's just, there's a level of the guy. In this situation, though, absolutely, boys, I think it's very prudent for Miami to go ahead and try to put all eggs into Garcia, especially being Rhett Lashley's first quarterback guy while he's the offensive coordinator at University of Miami. That's a big statement if he can land somebody like Garcia.
Yeah, that's a very, very good point. Kay, so last time you were on, the Rhett Lashley hire was somewhat recently. I wanted to ask you about Coach Likens and Coach Justice. And I know that you and I think it was you or Scoop, but you and I were sold on Coach Justice when Larry Bluestein tweeted out his approval. How impressed are you with those two guys? And I don't know, I just feel like they bring a different kind of energy that has been lacking in assistant coaches at Miami for a long time. What do you like about Coach Likens and Coach Justice?
Well, the commonality there right off the bat, Marsh, when you talk to them, by the way, they both have offensive coordinator experience. So you want to talk about guys who are battle-tested, those two guys are. And I think Larry, when he sung the superlatives and was very, very animate and happy when Miami announced Gary, has Justice not proved it? I mean, just look, you turn around, you get Isaiah Walker to come down, and every single guy, depending on what publication you read, he's nailed a blue-chip offensive lineman. Like that, he's got the Midas touch. He's hot. He was known to be a good recruiter. He's known to relate to the kids, and he's proven it. Then you turn around and you get somebody like Likens. He's doing really well as well. The buzz around the streets is that he's kind of connecting with the kids as well. And I'll go back to my initial point. What I'm very thrilled about is not only do you have Rhett Lashley, who has his ability, but now you got Justice. And these guys, they're no strangers to the spread. And that's a big deal. I mean, this is a guy who played Justice, played for West Virginia, and then turns around. He's a spread type guy, you know, so he understands it. And that's important. That's important for these kids to have that language. It's going to be different. It's not Enos anymore. Enos is like a defunct German. You know, it's a very harsh, dissonant sounded, looking at it on field. I'm trying to make it a very like a visualization that it looked like it sounded. Now you're going to have this nice little slick new language. And it helps that these guys call plays, especially in spread systems, and they're versed in them. So I'm very happy that Miami, I think they really, really, really did well on that, on those coordinator hires or those assistant hires. I really, really did.
Cool. So, yeah.
I've been so impressed with them. Sorry, go ahead, Jordan.
I was just going to say, you know, last time we had you on was February 18th. So the Rhett Lashley hire was just about a month old. I wanted to ask you if you've had any new impressions in the last 4 or 5 months, just from watching tape. Is there anything, any new information or new takes that you have that have been percolating?
Great question. Honestly, just caution Miami Hurricane fans in terms of Rhett Lashley will use the RPO game. And I don't know if I said this back in February, but when I went back and watched him tape, he's going to use the extension of the RPO and the quick perimeter passes like it's the run. And I can hear it now. They're going to be like, oh, we're not running the ball. We were running the ball good, and now we're passing. It's a numbers game with Rhett Lashley. And if you have those guys on the perimeter, it's like a toss play. I think Miami fans, it would behoove you now, listening to me, I will tell you, when you see that quick bubble on the perimeter, that is a toss. In Rhett Lashley's mind, that is a toss. He is okay with that. And if he'll leave it to his receiver and his wide receivers on the perimeter, block your one guy, make your one guy miss, and a big play will happen. I mean, to an extent, Enos had that happen. I remember Mike Harley's first touchdown ever at the U was of that variety. He just got a simple bubble off an RPO, and he scored. That's what you do with Miami kids in space. And I remember going back and highlighting that video and saying, this is what you need. Now, if you look at it and say that was a quick toss to your speedy wide receiver or speedy, you know, quote unquote halfback, then you're going to get a better, you know, realization of how Rhett Lashley likes to attack you. He likes to attack you with numbers. This isn't going to be I don't think it's going to morph into some sophisticated kind of run game. Like I'm thinking like San Francisco when they had Harbaugh, it was a very creative run game. I don't think we're going to have that. Rhett Lashley also does like to get into his bag. You know, he's going to have his core plays. He's going to have his core principles. And then from week to week, you know that they rehearse a couple plays that they're specifically trying to attack the defense that they have. So you're going to see some creative wrinkles when it's not just going fast. I was very impressed. They actually, was it the game against Memphis? Yes, there was a game against Memphis. Used 12 set personnel, meaning the one running back and two tight ends. And he just had a play that just caught my eye initially. He put two tight ends. He put them out into the field. He let them – you're thinking that they're going to block. They basically fake the bubble. The tight end's open by like 20 yards, high school open. That's what I mean by getting into your bag. He used his personnel. He caught Memphis off guard. I thought it was a very, very slick play. So he's going to get into his bag as well. And then what we've all been clamoring for, and this is redundancy in the state of the redundancy department, but – it's going to go fast. It's going to spread out. It's going to go fast. It's going to make things easy for these guys. And to kind of parlay off that, this is perfect amongst this COVID season because it is not a very overly complicated offense. Even now, you haven't heard, even when they initially got the playbook, you haven't heard what you heard in the past, that people are struggling with it, right? You haven't heard that yet. At least I haven't. Maybe you guys can correct me. And that's good. You know, like it's the same gentleman. It's the same thing when Manny Diaz came here. You were inundated with rules with Mark D'Onofrio. He talked week to week at nauseam about mental errors. The system gave you paralysis through analysis, right? It was too complicated. And when you don't have the hours that the NFL can pour into it, a system that's a lot more simple on the offensive side of the ball, you're going to see how much faster that they played year one with Manny Diaz coming off. You're going to see the same thing coming off of Enos. These guys are just going to play faster, not thinking, they're reacting. And that's what Miami needs. They absolutely need this. So those are my three new takeaway points from Rhett Lashley. The fact that it's simple and it's going to actually help when you're having this COVID season and practice time is, a limitation. Let's be honest. It's limited right now. It's an extension of the run game. You know, just when you look at those quick perimeter passes, and I think, yeah, there was one more, but I tried. So there you go.
Okay. So let's switch to the offensive line. And I think we're all in agreement. And I don't think a lot of Hurricanes fans, I mean, we have such an intelligent fan base, but they are still under the impression that we're going to still see this same offensive line like we did last year. But so now that Navon Donaldson is redshirting, who do you think replaces him? Or does your starting five on the line change, you know, completely?
Well, before he announced that he was going to have his injury, I actually didn't have him in my starting five. And I think this is a smart decision for him, too, to heal up off his injury. This is a system, too. And I'm not taking a shot when I say this. But because of the tempo, because of the humidity, you got to be a little light on your feet. And if you have a propensity to kind of pack on some pounds, especially coming off like a knee injury, I don't think this system would have did him any favors until maybe a following year, another year into rehab and rehabilitation. So I'm going to go on record now. And when I announced my starting five before he announced he was out, Navon Donaldson wasn't in it. So obviously I'm going to go ahead and default. You know, we got a, you know, it's funny. We lost to Jaren Williams and we got a different type of Jay Williams. So that's who I'm going to go ahead and pencil in at left tackle until proven otherwise. I think, you know, people forget this name, but I was kind of high on him before he left the program and came back. But I have Cleveland Reed doing some damage. I really do. I think this is somebody that people forgot about, but he's a blue chip kid when he initially came in. I think we're solidified on who the center is going to be, right? Corey Gaynor. And then at this point, I just don't think – I know they were messing around with a line, but I don't think people fully appreciated – we're appreciative of the fact of how good Jakai Clark was last year. I mean, he was a good umpire, right? You didn't hear his name a lot. And that's what you want as an offensive lineman. Your offensive lineman's like a good umpire in baseball. You don't know their name when they're doing a good job. When they're doing bad, you're going to hear it, right? You knew who your left tackle and your right tackle on the Miami roster was last year. There was a reason for that. But you didn't really hear Jakai Clark's name often. And I think Jakai Clark could probably go ahead, and he's just too much of a banger, too smart. And then I think Skaith is too talented. I didn't think he did a bad job at right tackle. So that's kind of where I am. You're almost looking the same thing, but your starting tackles that started against Florida last year, I don't have them initially penciled into my starting five. Now, in terms of the right tackle, I know he was coming off some hand injury, so that's going to play dividends, see how he bounces back from that, because I know – from a source, he was battling with a hand injury last year. So we'll see what happens there.
Okay, so we have one more question each. So this is an off-the-wall question for me, Ro. So, I'm a huge OBB fan, been listening for a long time. I've been on the show a few times. Love you guys. And so whenever I go on a long road trip, I always go back and listen to, you know, one of the interview guys or hangout sessions that you guys do with former players. My favorite one was with Malik Rozier. What did you take away from that interview? Because I know that it was pretty revealing at times, and you kind of came away thinking, man, I really gave this guy kind of too hard of a time. At least that's what I was thinking. What did you take away from that interview with Malik, and how do you like view his time at Miami, and also how do you view Mark Richt and how he handled that situation?
You know, I was floored. That's the word. After that interview, we're creeping up on our 100th episode, and you know, it just started like you guys, just a bunch of buddies who have a passion for the Hurricanes. And we've gone on so many different twists and turns, and it, you know, at times we're a variety show, and at times, you know, we just, especially the off season, like you guys are understanding now, it's just off season talk kind of is tough, especially when it's, you know, when you have no sports to talk about. But then when I look back on my Orange Bowl boy career, that's going to be my highlight. And we could do another 200, 300, 400, or only two extra episodes. It taught me a lesson, Marsh. It just, like you said, I mean, I was a quarterback, you know, guy. I was writing for Insight, and I'm literally picking apart film And I wasn't shy about it. Like, listen, he missed this, he missed that. Shushing the crowd, I wasn't a big fan of. Trying to make a statement to his own team. I mean, there were so many things I was hypercritical about. And it's so easy as a fan sometimes. It's so easy as a fan to forget something, that that's somebody's son. You know what I'm saying? That is a kid. And to no fault of his own, he did the best that he could. And when that interview just kept going and kept going, I just walked away so impressed with him, to the fact that even I almost, Marsh, and I don't want to say this, I want to say this as humbly as I can, because that to date, and Jimmy Murphy was another great one of those capacities. But I think that episode just, I think it changed a lot of people's perception of Malik. You know, thing was over 10,000 listens. It was, I'm saying humble about that. It was just, and it wasn't because of us. It was simply because Malik just opened up, and you got to be behind the veil of something you didn't really necessarily ever get to hear in a different avenue. And I just thought Malik, I know when you asked Mark Richt handled it terribly. I mean, you can't go into Friday not announcing who your starter's going to be when they play on Saturday. Like, that wasn't a fair situation. And then to hear, And to break bread with other quarterbacks who played for Mark Richt, you're like, this system was just, everybody knew what we were running. And that was the ongoing joke, but it was reality. So just imagine being a quarterback under those pretenses. You don't know if you're going to play on Saturday. Everybody knows what you're calling. And that was the joke, but it was reality. This is coming from guys that said this. They felt like they weren't getting better. And it's just, the calls and the clamoring for Mark Richt to kind of relinquish his offensive coordinator duties was instantly validated for me when I heard that Malik Rozier story. I am always a proponent and big fan of him moving forward. He knows this. He is a great dude. He was embattled. We booed that kid, and he is the true definition of just hanging tough, that no matter what happens. Like, because we're fickle sometimes. We're Hurricane fans, you know. We'll love you one second, and we'll boo you the next. That's just how South Florida is. We're the constant bandwagoners. You know, we'll do that. I wish him nothing but the best of luck, man, because that was, no matter what, I'm telling you, 100 more episodes, I don't know what it is, but that will always be the highlight of my OBB career, is that interview. That was just such a monumental shift for me as a human being. To be like, you know what, back off, it's a kid. You know, stop being so hypercritical. This kid did nothing but give his all in all in a pretty bad situation. So that's where I am there.
Yeah, I agree with Marsh in that was also my favorite. You know, it was good. And with you, you know, it totally just like shattered my perception of Malik as a person and a football player, to the point that like I can remember what I was doing when I was listening to that, you know, because I felt a lot of guilt in raking him over the coals and, you know, all that stuff. I mean, so as a consumer, like, thank you for doing that episode, because it was fantastic. And you know, I do think it, hopefully there's a lot of Miami Hurricanes fans that learned lessons from listening to Malik talk. And then, as you were saying, just, you know, hearing the insight into those years, 2017 and 2018, was priceless as well. You know, it really reflected just, you know, perfectly the last 20 years that we've been facing. You know, win 10 straight games, then lose, you know, what did we lose, like 5 straight or something like that, going between the two seasons. And geez, man, it's what a wild ride. But anyways, I got one last question for you. It's real quick. I'm going to set the over and under at 600 rushing yards for De'Eriq King. And I want you to tell me if you're taking over or under.
Oh, that is a great number. That is a great number, because that is about where I would anticipate. You know, like if you told me 500, I would say over in a heartbeat. 600 is making me pause on taking the over, but I will tell you, it will be close, and I will take the over, but not by much. I think 600 yards, I mean, he's got the capability. He was one of the few players in NCAA history who actually threw over 400, and I think there's 3 total in history, if my memory serves me right. He threw for over 400 in that USF game and ran for over 100. So that's only been done a few times in NCAA history. So he has the capability of rattling off a 100-yard game with his feet in one game. But the only caution and concern that would make me go under is if we're actually going to play a full schedule. So yeah, if they do this abridged ACC, then I'll say no. But that is a very good starting line. That would get action on both sides. If it's a full 12 games, I'll say over 600, not by much. If it was a 10-game season, I'd say he's under by a little bit. So that's where I'm at.
All right. Cool. Sorry, go ahead. Ro, thanks so much, man, for coming on. And make sure you tell Toast and Scoop I say what up. You know, I think so highly of you guys. I always say that you guys are like the big brothers I never had in this Canes world. But yeah, thank you so much for coming on, brother.
Absolutely. And, you know, and from us and Marsh, just glad to be on with you, man. And I appreciate what you said. I mean, yeah, you're like you're a little brother. I've definitely adopted you. You mean a lot to me. I don't know if you know this. And I, you know, my heart, you know, is with you in your endeavors. I wish you, Jordan, all the best of luck. You know, you guys do something special in your own right. You guys do it very, very well. When people ask us, man, we always recommend too, because we, you know, we're all family. At the end of the day, we're all Hurricane fans, and you know, we pull for each other. There's never any animosity in terms of that. We don't roll that way. And it's just been one wild ride. We go up together, we go down together, and we just try the best. But glad to see you out here, buddy. Love you guys, and you know, thank you. Thank you so much for having me on. I appreciate it.
Absolutely, yeah, brother. I love you too, man.
All right.
See ya. Thanks, man. Cool. Yeah. Dude, Ro is the greatest.
That's one of my favorite episodes ever. Those are two of my favorite people.
Yeah.
And not just like in Kane's Twitter, but like just that, yeah, like I've met. Like Ro is, he's such a good man, and Gabby's like a brother to me. Ro's really tall too. I remember when I met him for the first time, I'm like, wow, you're huge. I was so I was intimidated. Yeah. But like the dude has like a heart of gold, and he knows what he's talking about when it comes to football.
That I think both those things are very apparent just talking to him. You know, you can at least to me, like that when he talks on a personal level, it feels extremely genuine. You know what I mean? And then of course you talk to him for 5 minutes about football and you suddenly have self-confidence issues about your own knowledge of football. So
bro, I think I know like a little bit, and then I go watch his like film breakdowns, yeah, and I'm like, wait, what? Like, yeah, what is that? Like, what are you talking about? Like, are we even watching the same sport?
Yeah. Yeah. I feel, you know, sometimes I feel like a true sports geek or like a football head, you know, just watching a quarterback film. And then, you know, I'll be a little high on myself and be like, oh, yeah, I could do this, you know. And then you hear Ro talk about, you know, you can tell just from talking to him that he's watching totally different things than I do. you know what I mean?
Yeah.
He's like talking about the lower body, like acceleration and how it's turning and stuff. And I'm just like, you know what? I didn't even know that was important. So.
Dude, yeah, I loved, and I knew I was going to love this episode. We were talking about it earlier today. Like, I admit all my expectations, just the way, and I'm so happy I asked him, like, the Rozier question, because that just, like, made my heart happy.
Yeah. Dude, that was such a good episode. Definitely, I mean, everyone, if you haven't heard that Malik Rozier episode of the Orange Bowl Boys, definitely do yourselves a favor. And, you know, Ro didn't really plug his own podcast, but just listen to the Orange Bowl Boys anyways, but definitely listen to that episode.
Yeah. And they've also done, I mean, they've also, the Jimmy Murphy one is incredible. Yeah. I loved the Braxton Berrios one just because I love Braxton. Brad Kaya was great. Like, yeah, they've had some really, really good guests. And we need to get Toast and Scoop on. Yes. You know what would be fun if we just did like a round table episode, just the five of us one night.
I would love that, man. I've never talked to Scoop or Toast before, but I would absolutely love to.
Bro, if I had a twin but just like 20 years older, it would be Scoop.
Yeah.
I love him, and I love Toast. Oh, they're just so great, and they've been so kind to me. I remember when Roe first invited me on the show, the Orange Bowl Boys, it was last summer, and it was when I was, like, getting fairly known, you know, by the Canes Twitter and everything, and I'm like, wait, what? You actually want me to come on the Orange Bowl Boys? Like,
yeah.
Wait, what? I think I was on the same show as, like, Gino Toretta, and I was so nervous. And then when I went and saw their live show in Florida, uh-huh, where Brad Kaya was on, they invited me up, like, on the show while Kyle was on there too. It just meant so much, and I'll never forget when they wanted me to call in after the Louisiana Tech game just because of my outburst from that loss, and I can't say enough about those guys. Same for Gabby. Like,
oh man, it's, yeah, I agree, man. This is, I mean, we say it all the time, right? I say it all the time, just, we're surrounded by so many good people in what we do. And episodes like this are a good reminder of that. And you can't just help but feel extremely grateful, you know, like Ro doesn't need us. You know what I mean? He doesn't need to come on our show to talk about, you know, quarterbacks, because he has his own platform. That's you know, every bit, if not a lot bigger than what we do. So, you know, so it's purely out of altruism and support that he's coming on our show to talk about De'Aaron King and Rhett Lashley. So I just appreciate it a ton, and Gabby as well. You know, I mean, Gabby is, you know, he's, I think he's still 100% on his crystal ball projection. So, you know, kudos to Gabby, and he's going places too. So it's cool.
And I'm so proud of him, man. Like, oh, we would talk at fall camp, and like there'd be times like where neither of us, like it would be like late at night and like we couldn't sleep. We would Snapchat and we would just literally just tell each other like, dude, you and I, we're next, man. Like, we're going to do this. Like, we're the next like big guys in Miami. And like Gabby is making it happen, man. And hopefully I can follow in his footsteps, but I'm so proud of that kid and just what he's doing, and so happy he's getting married, and I'm just so happy.
Yeah.
Like that was honestly, I'll declare it, favorite episode ever.
Dude, it was definitely it's definitely worthy of that description, man. It's good people and good chats, you know. You can't ask for more. That's why we got into the podcasting business. You know what I mean? It you can't ask for something more than talking about sports with good people for your job, you know?
Yeah. Like, and that's why, you know, that's why I love the way that we are. Like, we don't just ask these people like just info. Okay, goodbye. But like, I mean, like, we actually, like, talk to these guys. Like, actually, like, Gabby – I love Gabby, and I love Ro. Like these – like, they're actually, like, my friends that, like, I've met, and, like, I can actually, like, talk to them like human beings, not like we're robots, like, just searching for recruiting gold mines and, you know, quarterback mechanics. It's, like, we actually talk about more than just football, and that was very, very kind of Ro at the very end. He said some very nice things after my father passed away. Gabby, I mean, literally right after I sent the tweet, he texted me about 30 seconds later, and he would check up on me every other day. And two of the best people out there.
Good people.
Two of the best people.
We are lucky, man. We're lucky that we get to associate with some good people and talk sports with them.
Yeah. Could you imagine if like we just like were somehow just like UCLA fans or like Cal fans? Like, that would suck.
Ugh.
I'm so damn proud to be a Miami Hurricane fan.
Yeah, man. It would suck to be a Cal fan, dude.
Yeah. Like, there are actual people out there who are fans of like Nevada or Colorado State. Like, those poor bastards. Like, they don't realize, even though we haven't been great, like, it's still just, like, I love just, like, hanging out on Twitter and just talking with Canes fans. And, like, last night when we did that Zoom call, like, the six of us, like, I had a blast.
Yeah, dude. That's good stuff. Dude, imagine being a Florida State fan and just knowing that you support evil.
Well, and then also, you know, I mean, not only that, but like you're probably missing like 13 teeth. I mean, you're married to your first cousin. There's a lot of baggage that comes with being an FSU fan, and just the fact that they suck. I'm still – now you just got me fired up about the whole ACC thing. There's no way. There's no way on God's green earth that an actual college football writer believes that FSU is better than Miami right now. Actually, there is one person on Twitter, an actual writer. I said he can come on the show because I want to help him. He said FSU has a better – he said FSU has the best defense in the ACC.
Oh. Ugh.
On what earth? Like, what is he smoking? Nothing good, obviously.
He comes on the show. Let me know if we have him on. Let me know who it is before we have him on. And I will be polite and supportive, but I will definitely be in his ear about that.
All you have to say is Greg Rousseau, and we already have a better defense than FSU.
Yeah.
So
I picture I don't live in Florida, you know. I picture every FSU and UF fan pretty much living in the same house that like Bobby Boucher lives in.
Yeah.
That is my perception. That is my perception of Florida State and Florida fans.
They're so stupid. Like people talk. I mean, we're just so blessed that we are actually smart and know football. Like I have FSU fans, many FSU fans saying that that FSU is better than Miami. It's just like I'm not afraid to admit it. Like Florida is far better than Miami. But like if you're a Florida State fan, just admit, like it's okay to admit Miami's better. We may win by 40 this year.
Yeah,
like they just don't seem to realize, and they seem to forget that we have De'Aaron King, that we have Rousseau, we have Brevin, FSU killer, we have Wiggins, FSU killer, we have Lashley, we have Roche. Like they have two players. They think that Norvell is going to come in. Did I miss something? Is he bringing a good quarterback? Is he bringing a decent offensive line? Is he really – like, what the hell do they think he's bringing? He's got nothing.
Dude, the only way that FSU could actually be better than last season is if he brought the entire Memphis roster.
Yeah.
Because Memphis was better than them.
Because it's FSU and they deserve nothing but pain. Yeah. But I think this year they will not be good. I would at best, I think they get 7 wins at best.
They're in free fall right now, man. It does not look good.
Sanders, one the greatest player ever to come out of Florida State, who still is very involved with the program. His son chose FAU over FSU. FAU. He chose Willie Taggart. The guy who just got fired over Primetime's alma mater. And FSU doesn't have a quarterback. Like, I think they have, like, a true freshman. But, like, I think they're about to lose their quarterback commit to Bama. So, I mean, like, they can't do anything to stop it because they're not going to win. What are you going to do? Like, they're bankrupt. They live in, I just remember when I was living in Tallahassee, that was the hate. That was like the Dalvin Cook era. That was the Jameis Winston era. FSU was like the king of college football. And just to see how far it's fallen, it's even more incredible than Miami. Like, it just because it's gone so quick. I mean, you had guys like Jalen Ramsey, Derwin James, Dalvin Cook, Devontae Freeman, Jameis Winston, Kelvin Benjamin. Now you don't have Dick.
Yeah.
We just went from a happy place to a really dark and angry Marshall place. But I'm right. Like, I'm right, aren't I?
Yeah. No, of course you're right, man.
Like, what do they think? Like, what did, like, I think we had, like, 18 sacks against them last year. And they're bringing back that whole line. And we got better on the line.
Yep.
We may kill James Blackman, the poor bastard.
Oh, man.
And I still I still think DeAndre Francois is laying on the ground at Hard Rock Stadium after the beating we gave him 2 years ago from by Joe Jackson and Gerald Willis, dude. It was incredible to see that, like, a quarterback take that kind of beating, and then it was multiplied last year with Hornibrook. That dude, there was a time in, like, the second half where he got sacked, I swear, every play.
Yeah. I'm with you, man.
Oh, I'm going to have a heart attack.
Well,
oh, my God.
All right, man. Any final words to the viewers of this fine episode?
Oh, man, do we have some big things planned for you guys.
Oh, yes. I'm very excited.
We got great guests, and we have a potential huge guest that could – it won't be till about September.
Yeah.
Former general manager in the NFL. Yeah. One of my heroes in the football world.
Yeah, man.
Oh, and also, before I go – I was thinking about it all night. We have to get Michael Irvin and Jimmy Johnson on at some point. But we have to. So, Canes fans, if you're listening to this, send out a tweet. Tag the playmaker. Yeah. Tag the coach. Because, yeah. I mean, so – and obviously this is like a tribute to my father because Irvin was his favorite player and Jimmy was his favorite coach, both Hurricanes, both Cowboys. We're going to make it happen. I don't care if I have to freaking go boat around the Florida Keys looking to find Coach Johnson or bust into the NFL Network and demand Michael Irvin to come on the podcast. It's going to happen.
Yeah, man. Let's start the hashtag, man. Michael Irvin to Fours Up.
Just tag him and say, hey, please. We have a pathetic friend named Marsh, and he just loves you so much.
Yeah.
But other than that, we'll see you guys on Thursday.
Yeah. See you then.
Thank you, Ro. Thank you, Gabby. Love you guys. I love you, Jordan.
Hey, I love you, man. And I love Gabby and Ro, too. Great guys.
Okay. All right. See you Thursday. Go, Canes. God bless you all, except if you're an FSU fan. Nah, God bless you, too. Just know that you suck.
Okay. Go, Canes, man.
This has been the Fours Up Podcast.